At this time, let me invite you to turn to the book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 8. Ecclesiastes, chapter 8. Now, this is found on page 675 in your pew Bible. Ecclesiastes, chapter 8, we'll begin at verse 1 and read as far as verse 15. Pay attention. This is the Word of God. Who is like the wise man? And who knows the interpretation of a matter? A man's wisdom illumines him and causes his stern face to beam. I say, keep the command of the king because of the oath before God. Do not be in a hurry to leave him. Do not join in an evil matter, for he will do whatever he pleases. Since the word of the king is authoritative, who will say to him, what are you doing? He who keeps a royal command experiences no trouble, for a wise heart knows the proper time and procedure. For there is a proper time and procedure for every delight, though a man's trouble is heavy upon him. If no one knows what will happen, who can tell him when it will happen? No man has authority to restrain the wind with the wind, or authority over the day of death. And there's no discharge in the time of war, and evil will not deliver those who practice it. All this I have seen and applied my mind to every deed that has been done under the sun, wherein a man has exercised authority over another man to his hurt. So then, I've seen the wicked buried, those who used to go in and out from the holy place, and they are soon forgotten in the city where they did thus. This too is futility. Because the sentence against an evil deed is not executed quickly, therefore the hearts of the sons of men among them are given fully to do evil. Although a sinner does evil 100 times and may lengthen his life, still, I know that it will be well for those who fear God, who fear Him openly. But it will not be well for the evil man, and he will not lengthen his days like a shadow, because he does not fear God. There is futility, which is done on the earth. That is, there are righteous men to whom it happens according to the deeds of the wicked. On the other hand, there are evil men, to whom it happens according to the deeds of the righteous. I say that this too is futility. So I commended pleasure. For there is nothing good for a man under the sun except to eat and to drink and to be merry. And this will stand by him in his toil throughout the days of his life, which God has given him under the sun. So far from the Word of God, may He bless it in our hearing today. The last time we were in Ecclesiastes together, we were in chapter 7. And in that, in the time we spent together, we considered the limits of wisdom. It won't give you control over your life. It will not make you right before God. Wisdom is not a common possession even among humanity. However, Solomon went on to say that wisdom can make sense of your life. Even if it doesn't give you control of your life, it can make sense of your life. And it can lead you into a right standing with God through God's forgiveness and mercy, through His own righteousness. And we saw that righteousness provided for us in the Lord Jesus Christ. And Solomon concludes chapter 7, which we did not read this morning, saying that he was seeking to know, investigate, and possess wisdom, and seeking to make this, a similar comparison of wisdom with foolishness, so that he could explain what is good for a man in this lifetime. He said that earlier in chapter 7. No one knows what's good for a man in his lifetime. And what Solomon admitted to in the end of chapter 7 is that he couldn't find an explanation. Not a satisfying one, not a full explanation. Wisdom was not able to give to him some key to unlock the mysteries of this life. And so, Solomon, you can imagine, thinks of the wise men that sit in the court of the king and who come and provide instruction and come and provide explanations. And it would appear that in chapter 8, as he opens up, who is like the wise man? Solomon seems to be desiring a court sage. Or maybe he's envying the wise men who so often came to give him counsel. But actually, it's not the wise man position that Solomon is so interested in. He begins to, in his mind, make a distinction here between the men who are truly wise, those who possess character and behavior that reflects that they are those who fear God. And so that's what he moves into. He moves into wanting to talk more about, wanting to think about what it is for us to be like these wise men. We know the courtiers that he's thinking of. In fact, it says here, who knows the interpretation of a matter? Where is the wise? Who's like the wise man, and who knows the interpretation of a matter? That word interpretation is a very distinct word that's actually used a few places in Scripture. I'll give you a couple of them, and you'll see where I'm going with this. It's the word pesser, and it actually means the ability to understand and explain mysteries. It's used in Genesis chapter 41 with Joseph. You remember Joseph? In Genesis 51, Pharaoh is introduced and he needed a Joseph to interpret his strange dream. The dream of the fat and prosperous cows eaten up by the thin and lean, bony cows. The dream of the stalks, one being eaten by another. And when he went and sought the information or the understanding from all of his magicians, all of his wise men, there was none who could explain it to him. But then it was found out that there was a prisoner who could interpret dreams. And once Joseph explained to him what he had seen by God, he says, "Since God has shown you all this, there is no one so discerning and wise as you." It's also used in the book of Daniel. You can consider Daniel, who was threatened by an indignant and furious King Nebuchadnezzar to be executed along with all the other wise men because they couldn't tell the king both the dream and its interpretation. Nebuchadnezzar had been manipulated one too many times by fortune tellers who gave to him vague messages. So he puts them to the test and they could not pass the test. And he says, "Fine, I'm going to cut your heads off." But Daniel and his friends requested compassion from God, from the God of heaven, concerning this mystery. And both the dream and the interpretation were revealed to Daniel in a night vision. And so Daniel comes and he says, "Please don't kill the magicians. I have the dream and its interpretation." When he tells the king both the dream and the interpretation, what does the king say? Surely your God is a God of gods and a Lord of kings and a revealer of mysteries, since you've been able to reveal this mystery. Solomon is thinking about, well, not Daniel, but Joseph, and wise men in his own court. And he's thinking not merely about their position, but their character, their behavior. Men acting in wisdom when in submission to authority. The wise man who explains mysteries to the king, he is an example to guide all of us in how to deal with earthly governments, whether good or evil, even in matters of life and death. The man in the king's court who possesses this wisdom, it says in verse 1, he wears this wisdom. It illumines him. In other words, he expresses joy. It causes his stern face to beam. In other words, it expresses his character of humility and contentment. So Solomon highlights the character that's needed to live and serve in those in authority over us, especially when those authorities contradict God's authority and we're faced with difficult decisions. And so that's where we're moving today. He says, and you remember back in chapter 6, he was making this comparison. Well, I don't know what the good is that man is to do in his life. I cannot answer that particular question. But I can answer this question. What is better than other things? And so this is where we find ourselves. We're still in that same thought. We're still in that same vein. For Solomon, he's saying, there's a better way for you to be under submission. There's a wise way for you to be under submission. So I have 3 points to help guide us through the text. In verses 2 through 6, we see wisdom's behavior under authority. Wisdom's behavior under authority. And then in the last part of 6 through 8, wisdom's boundaries under the sun. Wisdom's boundaries or limits under the sun. And then finally in verses 9 through 15, wisdom's beliefs under King Jesus. So wisdom's behavior under authority, wisdom's boundaries under the sun, wisdom's beliefs under King Jesus. Let's move first to wisdom's behavior under authority. Now as we're focusing on the wise man in the king's court, Solomon gives us several considerations that are practical to us, things that we can take and we can exercise ourselves, even though we're not serving on the king's court. And what he highlights for us is that one with wisdom has a particular characteristic, behavior. The wise person is prudent, and the wise person is patient, and the wise person is principled, and the wise person is perceptive. Let me show you how he highlights this. First of all, look at verse 2. I say, keep the command of the king because of the oath before God. Yeah, the wisdom is prudent. You cannot serve the king. You cannot be on the court of the king without submitting to and supporting the king's word, his command. Literally, it says, keep the king's mouth. That's what it literally says. Later on, you see in verse 4, you know, the word of the king is authoritative. Keep the mouth of the king. Our first duty then is obedience. Give to Caesar the things that belong to Caesar. But this is true for anyone under authority. You can't be part of the household and not submit yourself to the government of the household. Sometimes we think, oh, that's fine. I'll just go find another household. I'll just make my own household. See, but You can go and find another household, but you're going to have to submit there. You can go and create your own household, but you're going to have problems there if you don't know yourself how to submit. This is a heart issue. Isn't this what God taught Adam and Eve in the household of the garden at the very beginning? Obey me. Note Solomon's motivation for obedience because of the oath of God. It's literally because of the oath of God. And so a question arises among the commentators, whose oath is being spoken of here? Is this Israel's promise? Is this the king's promise? Is this God's promise? And you can understand the logic in any of those. You know, obey the king because it's a promise you made, Israel. Obey the king because the king made promises to serve you. Therefore, you have a responsibility to him. Or obey the king, keep the commandments of the king because God has made a promise, and therefore we need to serve the king, serve God by serving the king. Something like that. Well, in this particular context, the days of Solomon, and in the nation of Israel, God promised to be with and bless his people through the leadership and authority of his king. And so the king was to serve in covenant to the Lord. The wise man obeys the king because of the system that God has set up. The wise man obeys the king because he fears God. In essence, this is the Lord's oath. Paul speaks about this in a similar way in Romans 13. Every person is to be in subjection to the governing authorities, for there's no authority except from God. And those which exist are established by God. Therefore, whoever resists authority has opposed the ordinance of God. To not obey is to disobey God. Now, not every magistrate today serves in covenant with the Lord, but that's what's going on here especially. There's a, if you will, there's a super added obligation because they have, this is the nation of God. This is the nation of Israel. Well, there, of course, are limits to obedience to human authority when they command us to sin. But in their weakness, the magistrates serve in an office that God has ordained, and with the purpose to reward those who do good and punish those who do evil. And that actually brings us to our second consideration. Solomon is aware that there are limits to our obedience. I want you to notice that secondly, he points out that wisdom is patient. Verse 3, don't be in a hurry to leave him. Don't be in a hurry to leave the king. What could this mean? Well, the idea is that to be in the king's presence was a great privilege. And to then come away or come out of his presence, especially for a wise man to say, no, I'm not going to go see the king. That is a great dishonor. But why would the wise man do that? Well, because maybe he thought, maybe he just didn't agree with what the king did. We're going to see in verse 4, who's going to say to this guy, who's going to say to the king, what are you doing? It's easier, instead of confronting him, to just kind of stay out of his presence. Well, what Solomon is saying here is this: we ought not distance ourselves from those in authority too quickly. It's easy to scorn those in authority after a terrible judgment that they've made or a wrong decision that they've enacted. But what it's saying here is be patient. There's a particular weakness that belongs to men. We need to see a track record here. But It's balanced by what he says next. Do not join in an evil matter, for he will do whatever he pleases. Wisdom is patient, but wisdom is also principled. While we be patient, we must also make sure that we don't compromise ourselves as we wait to see what the king will do, or what the magistrate will do, or what our parents will do, what our husband will do. We see examples of this. You can think of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Here the whole nation is to bow before the golden statue of Nebuchadnezzar, and these three refuse. No, we will not do it. They will not join in an evil matter. You can think of Daniel. When it is told that no one is to pray to their gods, but rather they are to bring their prayers through the king to their gods. What does he do? He prays more frequently, but only to God. He will not join in an evil matter. Or think of Obadiah, the servant of Ahab. In 1 Kings 18, Ahab called Obadiah, who was over the household. Now Obadiah feared the Lord greatly, for when Jezebel destroyed the prophets of the Lord, Obadiah took 100 prophets and hid them by 50s in a cave and provided them with bread and water. He was a servant. Here was a steward. Here was principled wisdom. So don't be in a hurry to leave him. Don't join in an evil matter. And then wisdom is fourthly perceptive. Verse 4. Since the word of the king is authoritative, who will say to him, "What are you doing?" Today, we love to say, "What are they doing?" We say, "What are they doing?" all the time. We don't think twice about criticizing our leaders with a, "What are you doing?" But the wise man knows when to quietly remove oneself or when to bring accusation. There are certainly times when wise men will say to kings and princes, "What are you doing?" We read about John the Baptist. "What you're doing is unlawful. You cannot marry your brother's wife." And so wisdom is perceptive. Solomon goes on with this perception theme. He says in verse 5, and this is kind of a summary of what he's already been saying, "He who keeps a royal command experiences no trouble, for a wise heart knows the proper time and procedure." For there's a proper time and procedure for every delight. It's interesting, it translates it delight. It's just the word for thing, for everything. "Though a man's trouble is heavy upon him." You see, because the wise man is prudent and patient and principled and perceptive, he favorably secures the king's favor. And in the right time and in the right way, the wise man becomes unburdened by the king because he waits on the Lord to supply his favor. Before I give you some examples, I'll give you some examples first, I think. Consider Nehemiah. He served the king of Persia as his cupbearer. And after hearing about the disrepair of Jerusalem, he cries out to the Lord, "Oh Lord, please restore your people and restore your city and restore your glory in the earth." And then because the king could see that he was downcast, he was invited to share his burden for rebuilding the city of the Lord. After praying and fasting for 3 days, Esther presented herself to the king with her burden for the looming and threatening plot to destroy her people. But even then, patiently, she took several banquets to secure the king's favor. You see, this is what we see, the wise one who deals with those in authority. And it puts before you a question. How do you deal with those who are in authority over you? Are you prudent? Are you judicious? Are you keeping the lawful and right commands that are put on you? Or do you resist? We've talked about obedience in other sermons as well. How do you test if your obedience is patient and principled? Well, are you obeying immediately? Are you doing what you've been asked? Are you being joyful in your obedience? Do you know how to disagree with those who are in authority? Do you know how to say, Mom, Dad, may I ask a question about this? Can I disagree with you on this? Do you know how to be perceptive? Do you know when there's a time to talk about it and when there's a time to just simply do it? This is what Solomon is putting before us. And now to the adults. It's easy to stand on the sidelines of our leaders and think how much better of a job we would do if we were put in charge. But imagine if you were put in charge. I don't mean in like the daydream sense. I mean, let the weight of the responsibility and the decision making to actually fall upon you for a moment. More than humility and patience, though, what do we need? We need faith. Every single person I've named in all of our examples, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, Daniel, Obadiah, Nehemiah, Esther, all of these are actually able to be who they are within the context of authority because of their trust in the Lord. Because of how they look to Him, because of how they submit to Him, because of how they honor Him. And what this does, it reminds us here, it says, a wise heart knows the proper time and procedure. This is a callback to Ecclesiastes 3. There's a time for everything. You remember that? That poem? And that poem, there's a time for this and a time for that. This is not a nice funeral poem. It's a reminder that God is sovereign. There's a time wherein He's carrying this out, and there's a time when He's carrying that out. And He wisely and powerfully preserves and governs all things. And so, what happens when we find ourselves in an evil matter that is being imposed upon us? Well, Solomon says rulers rule, but they don't rule ultimately, and they don't rule forever. They don't rule eternally. Therefore, we want to seek to honor God in our honor of earthly rulers. Now, this is the long point. I have two shorter points, but this is wisdom's behavior under authority. Wisdom's behavior under authority. Let's move secondly to wisdom's boundaries under the sun. As we've just seen, wisdom is very beneficial in living and serving those in authority. And the wise heart knows the proper time and assessment. That's the word there, really. It's not really procedure, it's assessment. But wisdom has its limitations. Wisdom can only carry us so far in our service to those in authority. And Solomon highlights two ways in which there are boundaries to wisdom, that wisdom won't actually bring us all the way through service. And I'll highlight why in a moment. But I want you to notice the two limitations he sets up. The first one is this. Wisdom will not tell you the future. Wisdom will not tell you the future. Look at verse 7. If no one knows what will happen, Who can tell him when it will happen? You can think about this. Think about Joseph. Would Joseph survive Egypt? How long was Joseph going to sit in prison? He's submitting to the Lord and he's under authority, but he does not know what's in front of him. What would happen to young Daniel as he was being carried off to Babylon with all the other youth? What would happen to those three men of faith if they refused to bow before the statue of Nebuchadnezzar? What would happen to them if they would be put into the furnace? And so you can't know the future with wisdom. But our trouble is more than not knowing the future. You can't even control the present with wisdom. That's the second point here. You can't even control the present. Look at verse 8. No man has authority to restrain the wind with the wind. It's really funny if you think about it. You don't have power to use the wind so that you can restrain the wind. You don't have power to restrain the wind, to use the wind, to control, you know, to... It's this perpetual problem here. What power do you have? Even the forces of nature are more powerful than you. You know, you set up a structure like this, and here we are fighting the rains and the storms and the winds, constantly trying to fix and patch together this building, because nature is stronger than this building. He goes on, or authority over the day of death. We may have some power to treat sickness, but no power to stop sickness. And death comes for us all. You can't control the present. There's no discharge in the time of war. When the conflict arrives, the soldier is not free to leave. And evil will not deliver those who practice it. This is so clever in Hebrew. We don't have time to really get into it at length, but let me just highlight one thing. So some will translate it, you know, evil will not deliver those who possess it. The word there for practice or possess is the word Baal. Does it sound like the false god, Baal, right? Or Baal. And the idea is that Baal means master or owner. And so those who have mastered or owned wickedness in order to try and accomplish some good or to accomplish whatever end they have, they can't escape that wickedness. Really, it's simply saying this: those who have possessed evil become possessed by it. And so, we've seen that wisdom is fascinating and it's desirable to many because it appears to offer the possibility of control over life. But here's the point. While you're tempted to think that you can change things because you have wisdom and so maybe your words or your actions will help, we have no real power. We're not in control. And that ought to actually, in some sense, give us freedom. Because then what we can do is we can walk, we can be resolved to walk trusting in the Lord, trusting in the one who has actual power over the wind, over death and life. The one who tells us when it's time for us to leave this war and come home. The one who sets us free from the evil that we try to take possession of. See, and this gives us real freedom then. You can think about those three men in the who are about to go in the furnace because they will resist the evil commands of Nebuchadnezzar. What do they say? Oh, Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to give you an answer concerning this matter. If it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the furnace of blazing fire, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But even if he does not, let it be known to you, O king, that we are not going to serve your gods or worship the golden image that you've set up. See, that Solomon is saying, you don't know the future by your wisdom, and you can't control the present by your wisdom. And that gives you much freedom to trust God and to walk in his word and to walk with him. And don't worry, because even the king, if wicked, will not reign forever. And that brings us to our third point. Wisdom's beliefs under King Jesus. While no king will rule forever, there is a king whom God has established to reign over heaven and earth. The government is upon his shoulders. He rules over a fallen world in a holy and wise and powerful way. He is always carrying out his good ends, even through the evil purposes that are plotted day by day in this world. So look at verse 9. All this I've seen and applied my heart to every deed that has been done under the sun, wherein a man has exercised authority over another man in his heart. Wisdom is assured, or it believes many things, and we see four of them here in these verses here, verses 9 to 15. The first one is this: we can be sure that there will be injustices in a fallen world, that there will be injustices. In verse 10, he says, I've seen the wicked buried, those who used to go in and out from the holy place, and they are soon forgotten in the city where they did thus. This too is not futility, hevel. This is vanity. The wicked get honored at death. They were wicked their whole lives. They did wickedness in the city, and yet they get a burial. And the language here is the idea of honor, an honor burial. They get a parade. And, you know, and what do they use? They use the fact that they went in and out from the holy place, that's what they're known for. They're wicked. What? The wicked get honored at death. But people don't remember their wicked rule because they forget about them eventually. There's another injustice that Solomon highlights in verse 11. Because the sentence against an evil deed is not executed quickly, therefore the hearts of the sons of men among them are given fully to do evil. You see, there's a delay in bringing righteousness and bringing judgment and justice to the evil that's done in the city. And what does that do? It gives confidence to sinners to get away with evil. These things are not outside of our homes either, by the way. Parents delay to discipline their kids. You know, what do the kids do? Gives them some courage to keep doing what they're doing. If they're not going to be corrected, they're going to keep doing what they're doing. This is a lack of love. We can be sure, under King Jesus, this will take place. But there's a second thing. We can be sure that it will be better for those who fear God. Verse 12, although a sinner does evil 100 times and may lengthen his life, you hear that? Even though the sinner just keeps on sinning because he's courageous in his sin, because there's no justice. And even if he's taken certain kinds of worldly shortcuts, sinful shortcuts, in order to try and lengthen his life, because he does not want to pass from this life to the next, still, Solomon says, I know that it will be well. And there the word well is the same exact word that's used up in chapter 6 when it says it's better. it will be better for those who fear God, who fear Him openly. There's a certain, it's one thing to fear God. And that word fear is the idea of trusting in the Lord and walking in His ways. But there is a sense sometimes, we've talked about being wise and prudent and knowing when to quietly walk out of, you know, out from under authority, these kinds of things. But this is the idea that he is to be feared openly. It is to be public. There is to be a profession of faith and purpose. There is to not only be a belief in our heart that God has raised him from the dead, but a confession of our mouth that Jesus is Lord. And whatever that brings to us, and you can ask John the Baptist, it might be costly to say things like Jesus is Lord. It's better. But it will not be well for the evil man, and he will not lengthen his days like a shadow. You get that, children, the image there? Think about the sun. You know, as it sets, the shadow lengthens. But eventually what happens? The sun is gone and there's no shadow. The sun will not just kind of stay there and the shadow continues to grow. His days will be limited because he does not fear God, which implies that the sun doesn't go down on the believer. He just enters into a new sunlight. We can also be sure. So we can be sure that injustice will be in a fallen world that Jesus rules over. We can be sure that it will be better for those who fear God over in Jesus' reign. We can be sure that this life will have its vanity, its hevel. Verse 14, there is futility which is done on the earth. That is, there are righteous men to whom it happens according to the deeds of the wicked. And on the other hand, the same thing. What he's saying essentially is this. You know, sometimes the wicked get what the righteous deserve. And sometimes the righteous get what the wicked deserve. And that is unfair. And it is fleeting and frustrating and fading. There will be hevel in this life that Christ is ruling over. And finally, we can be sure that God is glorified and enjoyed in this life by those who rejoice in Him. We come to Solomon's punchline. Here's Solomon. Look, you can be in submission under authority and that doesn't mean it's always going to be great. In fact, you need to be in submission even when it's not great, but not sin, not compromise yourself. And there's injustices in the world, and life is vain, and you'll feel that vanity. And what do I have for you? I don't have a different message for you. I have the same exact message. You are to be those who fear God because it's better for you. Look to Him, and be joyful. Receive the gifts of God as gifts from God. And enjoy this life and carry that joy even into your labors through all the days of your life. This isn't going to be forever. Some people will say things like Solomon has this view. He doesn't speak at all about eternity. He has no perspective on eternity. That's just a terrible reading of Ecclesiastes. Solomon, first of all, back in chapter 3, he made this statement that God is keeping a record of everything. Why would he do that if there's nothing to bring that record to bear upon? But secondly, Solomon's words of wisdom are limited to life under the sun, to this life, right now. And I say that to bring up a point of application. Just one simple point of application. there are times that we live our lives too much as if whoever is in authority over us, that's our life. As if whoever is in charge, whoever is on city council, or we probably don't even know half those people, whoever's in the White House, which just shows how we've been seduced into this kind of thinking, that's our life. And it's either life or death. We cheer when it's the guy on our team. We complain and murmur when it's not the guy on our team. And our lives are way too politicized in this way. I mean, do you hear what Solomon is saying here? What you need is to be wise when you're under authority. What you need is to look to God and to wait upon God and to look to the Lord Jesus Christ as the one who actually is your king. He's the one in authority. You think that anyone is permitted or allowed to do any evil or wicked thing without the Lord first permitting it? But we act like it's like the most terrible thing. And well, until tomorrow's news, and then that's going to be the most terrible thing. And we're just living moment by moment by moment without an eternal perspective here. Solomon is giving us that. The title of the sermon was Wisdom Under Authority. I'm not speaking merely about earthly authority. I'm speaking about wisdom under the authority of Christ. That's where true wisdom resides. So may the Lord bless us and help us to be joyful. May help us to take joy in what He gives us to eat and drink and be merry with. May we take joy in God as we live together in fellowship together and wait upon Him to bring us all the way home. May we find ourselves more in the kingdom of Christ in this world than in the kingdom of men. Amen.